Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio.
Thursday to you. It's 4 minutes past the hour. Coming up in just a few moments, we're going to be talking to Joshua Good. He is the new editor of Faith Angle. It's a great publication. We'll find out more in just a few moments. One of the things that I like to share on opportunities like this are uplifting stories and moments. And this has actually happened on an airplane. Kimberly Bermudez, she's a teacher in a low-income charter school in the Chicago area. And so in the course of the flight and the conversation, she began, someone asked her, what do you do, Kimberly, for a living? And so she said, this is my job. And she began sharing some of the challenges that they have in this low-income area and the charter school. And she said, literally, the school does their best to provide a free breakfast, lunch, and after-school program. But really, everything else is really difficult to accomplish. The gentleman behind her overheard the conversation, gave her $500. I don't know if it was cash or check. It was very exciting. And other passengers also overheard, and they started giving her money. Kimberly then shared her story about the passengers on her Facebook page, and the school raised another $1,500. So over wow. $2,000 came out of that conversation. And I think here's an opportunity or a usage of Facebook that actually was quite redemptive.
Oh, my. And that's so inspiring just for a stranger and many strangers, not even to have, a Kickstarter or
right.
something where someone is asking for money, just to out of the goodness of their hearts and even the momentum of a trend that's still great to give, even if it's prompted by momentum. That's so encouraging to hear from, because when was the last time something awesome happened on an airplane?
Well, that's true. And we'll leave it there. Coming up in just a few moments, we're going to be talking to Joshua Good. Also, a little later this hour, our good friend Karen Swallow Pryor will be with us. And we're going to talk about 9 ways to make social media more Christian. She's got some great thoughts on this, and we'll be talking to her about them in the second half of this hour. So stay with us, Faith Radio Mornings. Good morning and welcome to Faith Radio Mornings. I'm Dick Whitworth, filling in for Peter Kapsner this week. Joy to be with you. Hope you're enjoying your Thursday morning. It's a joy today to introduce to you Josh Good. Josh is a member of the Ethics and Public Policy Center. He has recently been named the new Faith Angle Forum Director. And we're going to find out what all those big words and fancy titles mean as we welcome Josh Good to Faith Radio Mornings. Josh, welcome.
Thanks, Dick. Great to be with you.
Well, really appreciate your time and congratulations on your new position as the director of the new Faith Angle Forum. Why don't you give us a little bit of an overview of the Ethics and Public Policy Center and how that relates to the new Faith Angle Forum and vice versa?
Wonderful. The Ethics and Public Policy Center is a think tank in Washington, D.C. Staff of about 25 people that was founded 41 years ago in 1976, the same year that I was born, with the goal of helping to bring to bear the implications of Judeo-Christian religious tradition, faith, realities in matters of public life in the public square. And the Faith Angle Forum is something that was started by a guy named Mike Cromarty, a wonderful human being, a longtime vice president of UPPC, who 19 years ago thought that it would be wise to bring together journalists to help them better understand religious faith, religious life, the thinking of religious believers around the country, and what that sort of means for their own reflection about public policy and their own engagement in public life, voting, and the like.
Well, it's a great group, and I know that Mike passed away rather suddenly. You wrote a great tribute to him. Can you kind of give us an overview of who he was and how important he was to this conversation?
Well, he was a legend. Mike was not only the mascot for the 19 Philadelphia 76ers, and a friend to many evangelicals and Catholics and Jews and others in Washington, D.C. for the 34 years that he was at the Ethics and Public Policy Center, but also was a friend to many, many journalists. The tributes that were written to him, for him, when he last year died all too soon were just amazing. The New York Times, Wall Street Journal, The Washington Post, and far beyond. He also was a personal friend and mentor to me, and taught a class in 1997 that I took at Covenant College, his alma mater, as well. And that class led to my going to work for then president of EPPC, Elliot Abrams, for my first job, first year and a half out of school, and was how I started my career, thanks to him.
That's exciting. Now, the Faith Angle Forum and also the EPPC do a lot of bringing to bear really what conservative Christianity, I realize all faith traditions, but certainly conservative Christianity to light, to press people, because they don't tend to understand us very well, do they?
I think that's right. We live in a pluralistic society, and it's important to respect the space of and opportunities of our neighbors, to love them, to set up the common good. I think as conservative Christians, we can sometimes make assumptions about people on the left or the media or people in public life that we don't like very much, and this forum exists to help illumine some of that and advance values in the public square, but also to illumine some of that rather than to sort of cloud the space. Mike had a wonderful phrase, which was that it's better to light a candle than to curse the darkness, even in matters of journalism and religious life.
What kind of things do you do to actually facilitate some of this conversation? Because certainly we don't dialogue with each other anymore. We shout at each other, and more likely, more honestly, we shout past each other. How do you facilitate dialogue and conversation?
Right. I think that role of listening and being a moderator is one of the things that Mike was so good at. It's one of the things we hope to really continue to build on in the coming years. Essentially, we foster a table and a space for religious journalists, for mainstream journalists, for Daily Beat reporters to get away from it all and to come down to Miami Beach in Florida and spend two days, thinking through three or four different topics around a sort of big hollow square table. That's happened now for 20 years, the 19 that Mike led the project, and then this past year, Pete Wehner filling in for leadership, so talented, leading the project as well. So there have been something like 260 journalists who have attended Faith Angle Forums at least twice a year for the last 20 years now. And, you know, we try hard to foster a sense of a network that exists amongst those journalists to serve them, to pour into them, and to bring to bear some of the best thinking by scholars of sort of current issues of the day, whether that's evangelicals and Trump or Mormonism when Mitt Romney was running for president, or the rise of ISIS scholars in the Middle East and beyond. So we sort of set the table for excellent presentation, invite journalists into that conversationally in a sort of retreat-like setting, and then turn it over to them to reinforce those realities in their own writing and track some of that in the media.
If you're just joining us today, you're listening to Faith Radio Mornings. I'm Dick Whitworth. It's a joy to have on the phone Josh Good. He is the director of the Faith Angle Forum. A recent appointment for Josh, although not a topic or an area of which he is unfamiliar or uninitiated. But we are talking about the Faith Angle Forum and really journalism in the sense of how little they know who we are, even though evangelicals certainly have been around for a long time. Do you think it's fair? Is it evangelicals accurate in their complaints of bias in the news media? They just don't get us, do they?
That's a hard one. Certainly one could track directionally evidence for such a claim, and we certainly have a range of stories we have followed through the years. I've had the privilege of working in philanthropy in a space that's helped to support Faith Angle Forum in the past, work in think tanks and other places. You can see, the New York Times, for example, saying that Easter was the the holiday when Jesus was resurrected into heaven, 2013 or 14, to see comments recently on The View that
sure.
Mike Pence has people talking to him, Jesus talking to him back and forth in the middle of the night. What is this? Maybe this is a mental illness. So certainly there are examples. However, again, the project exists to reinforce and help and support more fair-minded, better journalism, and that's what we're really about.
All right. Josh Good, my guest. We're going to take a short break here on Faith Radio Mornings. By the way, if you haven't signed up for the devotional of Kay Warren's, you can do so today on our website at myfaithradio.com. Don't forget to do that. We'll be back with more Faith Radio Morning in a moment. Good morning and welcome to Faith Radio Mornings. I'm Dick Whitworth. It's a joy to be with you. Hope your Thursday is off and running well. And we're excited today in this next segment to continue our conversation with Josh Good. Josh is the director of the Faith Angle Forum. It's a part of the Ethics and Public Policy Center. As the new director, Josh has his hands full as we are facilitating conversation really about faith life in general. And Josh, before we go much further, tell me a little bit about yourself. How did you get interested in this area of work?
Sure. Well, as I mentioned earlier, Mike Cromarty helped to nudge a connection to the Ethics and Public Policy Center. That was my first job out of college. I worked on projects subsequently with ex-prisoners in partnership with the Labor Department and faith-based organizations in different cities around the country, work on healthy marriage and responsible fatherhood programming, work in philanthropy, work in think tanks, especially making a moral case for free enterprise in partnership with Christian college faculty leaders and others. And I really came to believe that the network is the strengthening agent in human history and in culture more broadly. The idea that a network of like-minded individuals who are committed to one another and to a certain cause over time acting in society, that's really, I think, the way that cultural change happens. We saw that in a lot of the work that I was privileged to do at the Kern Family Foundation, philanthropically these last three or more years. And in a lot of ways, the Faith Angle Forum embodies that because it is a network of journalists who know one another and can help one another in their craft. And we work hard to be sort of serving that and setting that up for success with outstanding scholarship. So that's sort of the anchoring motive. That's been true of my own life. Married, have three young kids. We're part of a little school, K-8 Christian school, that we helped start in D.C. in Wisconsin, called the Augustine Academy. But that commitment to the network, I think, is sort of the anchor that is a common thread in entering into this work.
Well, excellent. Again, we are grateful to have you on the air with us today in Faith Radio Mornings on the Faith Radio Network. Jack Jenkins wrote an article called "The American Media Needs to Take a Theology Class or Three," he said. It's from thinkprogress.org. I assume you read the article. Do you have any thoughts or feelings or reactions overall before we get into some of the specifics of which he recommended?
I think it's true. And the idea that many in the mainstream press may know Christians, may respect some Christians or Jews or people of faith in other traditions as well, but maybe don't necessarily understand religious faith much themselves and therefore have a hard time reporting on that. It's said that 83% of the country, at least today, believes in God. And, it's important that those who are covering the country culturally, politically, otherwise, appreciate that.
I would assume in most newsrooms the luxury of having a religion editor or someone specifically geared to this conversation is becoming fewer and fewer. So failure to understand religion, Christianity, can lead to some pretty inaccurate stories, right? You mentioned one a few moments ago, but it really does do that, does it not?
I think that's exactly right. I remember an interview with somebody from the New York Times, actually an executive editor there, Dean Backett, saying, you know, that, that they have an outstanding religion writer, but she's all alone. I remember him saying, we don't get religion. We don't get the role of religion in people's lives. And I think we can do much, much better. I think there are things that we can be more creative about to better understand the country. That was right after the election, which I think many people saw as a bit of a learning point. So many stories that illustrate the point you're making, Dick, and I think that's exactly right.
Sometimes it's nothing more than lazy reporting, do you think?
Sure. Take, for example, the piece, I can't remember where it was, the New York Times ran a story several years ago about how the Church of the Holy Sepulchre was the place where Jesus is buried. And, you know, it took about 24 hours for people to say, Jesus is buried, and there it was in print, is buried? Come on!
Well, that's, I guess we have to be forgiving in regards to that because it is certainly the secular press reporting, but it does seem somewhat comical in hindsight, 2020. Unfortunately, that's how we view many things like that. I would assume President Trump has created many opportunities for conversations and dialogue. Is that not correct?
You know, we are grateful to the generous supporters and donors who sometimes surprise us in supporting this work and making it possible. I think we had Molly Worthen talking about President Trump and the rise of the evangelical vote with a group of journalists most recently. That whole piece is available on our website, faithangle.org, if anybody ever cares to listen. But we are living in partisan and rancorous times, and that makes the opportunity very large, we think, for a project like this that's committed to civility and to dialogue.
We miss a lot of opportunities, do we not? If you're in journalism and you don't really understand the background of the stories, and I think of all the times that I hear reporting on Middle East and this faction is against this faction, and terms are interchangeable. They are Christians, but they're not Christians as we might understand them. It really does take ongoing commitment to be current and abreast of what is taking place as a journalist from a religious perspective. Would you comment?
Yes, and I think the privilege of introducing some of them to leading thinkers and policy experts, people who understand international relations and are working sacrificially day in and day out, often without any fanfare in Washington, D.C. and other parts of the world, is one of the real privileges of the project. We plan, actually, this coming fall, a conversation about human rights and some of the changes that are underway immigration-wise and beyond in the Middle East. And for journalists to be exposed not only to policy experts but also to talented storytellers who have boots on the ground and have experience in these places can bring to life in a human way things that are easy to otherwise stereotype.
Josh, as we close out the show and we have about a minute left, what drives you to put your suit and tie on every day and go to work? What's a win for Josh Good?
Well, I got to say, I'm a big fan of Christian radio. I listen to it all the time, usually in my suit and tie, suit at least, and it's great to be privileged to have the traffic all around us and listening to things that feed the soul. I look forward to doing much more of that in the coming years as I have a commute to D.C. instead of a commute to Milwaukee.
Oh, there you go. Well, check out our free app online. It's myfaithradio.com. We'd love to be a part of your daily commute, so I hope you'll check it out. Josh Good, the director of Faith Angle Forum, has been my guest today. You're listening to Faith Radio Mornings. We're 31 minutes past the hour. Coming up in just a few moments, we're going to be talking to Karen Swallow Pryor. She's a good friend of Faith Radio Mornings. And we're going to be talking to her about the 9 ways to make social media more Christian. If you have a question or a comment for Karen, we'd love to hear from you at 877-933-2484. You can text or call. Again, 877-933-2484. Karen is coming up in just a few minutes after the news and a word from Impact Audio. So stay with us. The 36 past the hour, Derwin Gray, pastor, author, former NFL star, says when we understand our new identity in Christ, God replaces the lies and labels we've subscribed to in the past.
I really love the psychological aspect of why do you do what you do? Like, why did I get offended? Why was I fearful? And I trace those thoughts back to a label. And then I have to replace that label with what Christ says, that in Jesus, I am more than a conqueror, not because I'm awesome, but because he is. If he says it, then I need to remove that label of fear by faith and replace it that I am more than a conqueror through him who loved us, that if he went to the cross, that if he rose from the dead and is seated on high and his spirit's in me, then that's who I am.
That's Derwin Gray, pastor, author, former NFL star. You can find out more about Derwin at our website, myfaithradio.com. Karen Swallow Pryor is coming up in just a minute on Faith Radio Mornings.
Do you have a grace-filled home? Most of the time, I'd have to admit, the answer is no. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. A biblical definition of grace is this: God's undeserved favor and forgiveness when we've chosen to do the unforgivable. In human terms, it's the love and kindness and forgiveness you show your teen in the face of bad behavior or poor choices. Grace isn't easy to give. It's not cheap. In fact, it costs a lot. But we're called to be the hands and feet of God. That means we're called to offer grace even when we're dealing with a rebellious teen. And how do you know exactly the right time to extend grace? How about when it's least deserved?
There's more from Mark Gregston on the Parenting Today's Teens website. Go to parentingtodaysteens.org. Parentingtodaysteens.org.
We're 38 minutes past the hour. Thanks for joining us. It's Faith Radio Mornings. I'm Dick Whitworth filling in for Dr. Peter Kapsner. Peter is off this week, but back on Monday. Our guest today is Karen Swallow Pryor. She's a regular, good friend of this ministry. And by the way, if you have a question or a comment for Karen as we begin this conversation on 9 ways to make social media more Christian, you can call or text us at 877-933-2484. And with that, Karen, welcome to Faith Radio Mornings.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
I think the last time you and I talked, you had just been involved in a bus accident. I know you were recovering. I assume still on the mend?
Yes, I'm still on the mend. Still about a month or so to go before I can walk unassisted, but I'm getting stronger every day and doing more different kinds of therapy every day, and even got out to see my first movie yesterday.
Oh, bless your heart. Well, good.
So that was a good experience.
Yes. Well, it's good to know that you're doing better and you are on the mend. You wrote a very interesting article for factsandtrends.net. It's a Lifeway website, but it's factsandtrends.net, called 9 Ways to Make Social Media More Christian. And frankly, it could never come at a better time. I think it's very timely and relevant. What possessed you to write it? What were you hoping to accomplish?
Well, I probably shouldn't admit this, or at least be embarrassed to admit it, but I do admit it. I spend a lot of time on social media, and I spend even more time now that I'm, recovering from this accident. And I've actually been on social media for years. I was on Facebook the first year it came out in the early 2000s as a young college professor, and my students were on it. I wanted to see what it was all about. And that was back when only people, college students or people with an EDU email address could get on it. And I got on it, and from the beginning, I began to treat it really as an extension of my classroom where I could share ideas and facilitate discussions. And then I got on Twitter. That's a whole other story. But from the beginning, I've always seen the positive uses of social media and used them and thought they were great. But then as more and more people got on and it changed in so many ways, and then, sad to say, it became a tool used by a lot of Christians, I just began to see a lot of nasty stuff. And recently I had a discussion with a social media friend, and he was asking me for some tips, and I was giving him my opinion, some of which I share in this article. And I said to him, he said, he just felt kind of stupid and bad that he didn't know how to, the manners for it. And I said, well, we grew up before this stuff was invented. We don't have a manual. We have to figure it out. And then I thought, I really need to write something like this. So I did.
Well, I'm glad you did, because I think your 9 ways really are very helpful and concrete, and they make a ton of sense, especially for believers. And so let's jump right in. We don't have Emily Post per se for rules and etiquette, but I think you've begun a good dialogue, because I know you like that. Treat people on social media like actual people because they are. Is that true?
I mean, it's so basic. One of the things that I have seen over and over is people saying things in ways that I know they would never say to their neighbor face to face, or to any human being,
right?
Even your work, even in disagreement, people forget that these are not just little avatars on the screen. That even the anonymous ones, even the anonymous trolls, as I call them, have a human being behind that avatar. And it's so easy to forget that when we're sitting at our screens pushing buttons.
Often I seldom, let me rephrase that, I seldom go to the comments section after an article. But when I do, I just can't believe the vitriol. These are horrible things said about the individual who just posted perhaps a well-meaning comment, and it's followed by someone else, and back and forth and back and forth. And it's like, wow, that's that playground kind of conversation will get you into a fist fight.
Yeah, it really brings the worst out in people. And I think it's easy to get caught up in without realizing it and just behave like, one person does one thing. It is like a child, a playground. One person does one thing, and so then you do the same thing back, and it spirals from there. And I really think it just takes a second to step back and say, wait a minute, what am I doing? And this is a person here. And just remembering that, I think, can change it dramatically for most people.
Yeah. Never say anything you wouldn't say to them face to face. Talk to us about being yourself on social media. Isn't that really the antithesis of what social media is all about?
Well, it should be. Of course, we've seen a lot of commentary on, especially when it comes to Instagram and the more visual venues of social media, where people present a life that's highly edited and very polished and not like real life. So that's one thing to be cautious of.
Sure.
But the other thing is, I have, I travel and speak, and I have, from time to time met someone in person that is completely different on social media. One person in particular who is just kind of a jerk on social media. And when I met him in person, I said, wow, you're really nice. And we kind of joked about it. But I thought that got me thinking, like, we really should try to, it's a limited, edited, just flat part of ourselves that we present on social media, but it should really reflect who we are. And that's why another friend I have on social media who's very curmudgeonly, he's a curmudgeon in person. So I love him. He is who he is. Just really, I think we need to think about that. Is the person I'm portraying here, especially for church leaders and pastors, because I do interact with a lot of pastors online, and I think there is no way, I know I say, there's no way this person is like this among his church people, because he wouldn't last very long.
Right.
So it's an easy trap to fall into, but one to watch out for.
Karen Swallow Pryor is our guest today. She's a professor of English at Liberty University, author of numerous books, and she's written an article for Lifeway on factsandtrends.net. It's called 9 Ways to Make Social Media More Christian. If you have a question or a comment for Karen, we'd love to hear from you. You can text us or call us at 877-933-2484. That's 877-933-2484. We'll be back in just a moment with more with Karen Swallow Pryor. 48 minutes past the hour. Karen Swallow Pryor is our guest. She's a professor of English at Liberty University, a regular on Faith Radio Mornings. And today, we're talking about an article that she put together called 9 Ways to Make Social Media More Christian. And it's on factsandtrends.net. You can check it out there. It's a Lifeway website, but it's factsandtrends.net. And Karen, before we jump into point number 3, we do have a listener who's texted in a question. He or she says, how do you reply if somebody comments rudely, inappropriately, or in a mean manner to something that you just posted? Do you delete the post? Do you ignore the person? What's your advice?
Oh, that's a question we have to ask ourselves a lot, unfortunately, on the internet. So, first of all, I generally don't read the comments. So if it's about an article that I've written, a lot of online publications have actually eliminated comments for the reason, because they are so destructive, not constructive. Other places I write that still have them, secular publications, I just simply don't read the comments because they're so nasty. But on, where I am most of the time on Facebook and even more on Twitter, where I do get a lot of nasty responses, it will depend on there are a lot of anonymous accounts out there that are, some of them literally are Russians sitting, it's very true. They are looking to stir up racism and division and strife, and you can kind of tell them after a while which ones they are. Twitter has cleaned a lot of them out, but those simply need no response. Some of them are known ones, people that I know troll me and will comment, and usually I mute those. That you can mute the accounts who actually don't even see the comments, so they can see you, but you can't see them. But then when it seems like it's a real person or a response that I should give a response, because this is the thing we forget. We're not just responding. When we're on social media, we're not just responding to that person. Everyone who follows us is out there watching. They're seeing what that person says, and they're going to see how we respond. So I respond for those people who are watching, not the person who made the nasty comment. And my personality is pretty snarky, and I have to watch it. So sometimes I do give a snarky response, but if I do, it's deliberate. It's to show, look, you don't play that game with me, essentially. Mm-hmm. But other times I will give a genuine kind of response or a sarcastic one that's a little more pointed, like, oh, that's very kind of you, or just something like that, and move on. But again, I think the key to remember is that we really need to respond to provide an example for the people who are watching, not the person who's making the nasty comment.
That's a great response, and thank you for the question. If you have a question or a comment for Karen, 877-933-2484. You can text or call that number, 877-933-2484. We just concluded our second writers' conference this past weekend, Karen, and one of the conversations was really how do I build a platform and those kinds of things. And I love what you put in the article. You said, ignore what experts tell you about using social media to build a platform. Instead, use social media to serve people. Wow, that's really changing the angle. Comment on that, would you please?
Yeah, and I don't want anyone's career to go kaput because of my advice, that's for sure. But you could choose the expert to follow. And if you don't have to follow my advice either, I have never treated social media as a platform building thing. And I think a lot of people would consider my platform rather, significant. Again, going back to when I first started, when I got on Facebook back when it was just college students, I'm a professor, I'm a teacher at heart. I used Facebook to do my thing, which is to teach. I used it to share articles and ideas and to facilitate discussion, because that's what I do in real life. When I got on Twitter, I do the same thing. That's who I am. That's what I do. I didn't care about platform, but people, because there are other people out there who have some of the same interests I do, and they're not just Christians, by the way. I have a lot of non-Christians that follow me, and people of different political and ideological persuasions. I just simply share ideas, share my articles, facilitate conversation. In recent months and years, I'm trying to focus more on sharing things of beauty like art and literature, because I think we all need more of that. But that's what I'm doing in my own life as well. And so if you do that sort of thing, the people who are of like mind will find you and follow them back. And a lot of people don't follow back. They think it looks impressive if they have, 2,000 followers and only follow 20 people. There's some formula out there that experts have given it to. And I think it just makes people look silly and as though they want to be elitists or something. Just use it to serve people and talk to people. That's why it's called social media.
Our assistant producer, Logan Roush, looked through the list and he wanted to comment because he loved one of your comments.
Oh, I love number 7, Karen. Be known more for what you are than what or
what,
who
what you are for.
Yes, what you are for, sorry, than what or who you are against. I know so many people who use social media, especially in this difficult political climate that we're in, as an angry, just every day an anger post towards somebody. What does that say about me as a person? I mean, who am I serving by criticizing every day I'm on social media?
Twitter has become more and more like that in the last few years, I think. I mean, and obviously politics draws that sort of use of it. But again, I see so many Christians doing this. I mean, that we have a lot of division denominationally and ideologically within the church. So I see, again, a lot of times pastors who rightly want to advance right teaching and the right handling of scripture. Of course, that's what they want and they need to do, and they should use Twitter to do that. And sometimes there is a time to point out error. But if your Twitter feed is constantly about pointing at some other guy or some other lady who's got it wrong, what does that say about your own ability to proclaim the truth that you say that you care about? Like, just proclaim the truth, embody the truth. It doesn't mean never point out error, but there are so many people who that's all that they're on social media for, is to point out other people's errors. And that's not very constructive or helpful.
Karen, thank you for your time today. Karen Swallow Pryor, she's a professor of English at Liberty University, author of numerous books, and her latest article on factsandtrends.net. It's a great article, 9 ways to make social media more Christian. We only got to 3 or 4, and so I think you should check it out. We'll be back with more in just a moment. Past the hour. Thanks for joining us. The podcast today will be up in within an hour or so. If there were segments of today's show that you would like to hear again, we would love for you to check it out on myfaithradio.com. Logan, you are our quasi-social media expert, at least on the Faith Radio Morning Show. You had an interesting takeaway.
Yeah, I really think, and she said it so very clearly, before what you are for, and be a light to other people. Think about this before you make a post. What if my pastor was looking at this? What if my grandmother? What if a potential job employer were looking at this comment or that post? How would they take it? Don't pretend you're talking to that person that you're about to send an angry Facebook message toward. Pretend you're talking to the general public who's going to see what you're posting. That'll save a lot of trouble.
I'm more afraid of grandma. Just being honest here. By the way, last night, if you watched ESPN ESPY Awards, the Vikings Minneapolis Miracle play last season is still being remembered by fans around the nation. Did you see the play? Do you know which one we're talking
about? I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, it was the 61-yard touchdown pass with the last seconds from Case Keenan to Stephon Diggs. It lifted Minnesota over the Saints. It was the best play, according to the ESPYs.
And very cool. As soon as that was done, both of them were interviewed, and the first thing they did was thank God for that incredible play.
Oh, that's great. Thank you for joining us today on Faith Radio Mornings. Have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow. Paul Perreault will be sitting in the host desk. Peter Kapsner back on Monday.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.